This is Linda Woods with WindowsToWellness.com, alternative talk radio about healing, self-help, and empowerment. This is Linda Woods on Windows to Wellness, and our website is WindowsToWellness.com. I'm so glad you're joining us today. We've got a very special guest today talking about a topic that is going to affect just about every single person listening and your friends who aren't listening and their relatives and their relatives. It's all about how to forgive. The title of our show today is Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And my guest is Dr. Michael Rice. He is the author of a book by the same title, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? His website is whyagain.com. He has a doctorate in naturopathic medicine and holistic philosophy, and he's the founder and director of Heartland. It's a self-healing sanctuary, and boy, that got my attention, self-healing sanctuary located in the Ozark Mountains. Is that right, Dr. Rice?
That's where we are, in southern Missouri, yes.
Southern Missouri.
By the way, the subtitle of my book is, And What You Can Do About It.
Oh, And What You Can Do About It. Well, let's start off talking about the main theme of your book. And a little later on in the program, I want to share some personal information about a forgiveness issue that I'm dealing with, but not right now. I want to hear all about you and exactly how you help people at your self-healing sanctuary.
Well, the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, looks at the topic of forgiveness from the perspective of the fact that you and I, we as human beings, are by nature creators. And, of course, in that process, we love to be acknowledged as creators when things are going really well. But when they're not going so well, you know, aren't we always aware of who the problem is? And isn't their name always them? If only they'd be different, then we wouldn't have to feel this way. And thus begins a problem when we pretend that we're not responsible for our own states of mind, for the output of our own physiology, then we end up finding someone to blame for that part of us that we're hiding from. If you go back into the ancient Aramaic language, which is the original language in which the idea of forgiveness showed up on the planet, the word forgive does not mean I have something terrible and painful happening inside of me, but of course it's all your fault and I'll forgive you, I'll let you off the hook. The word forgive is the tool with which you reach into your physiology and remove those states that you would rather not be in again and again and again. It has nothing whatsoever to do with letting somebody else off the hook. It's a technology that frees your physiology from disease processes. Because every time that you put something into your physiology that you deny and you pretend you're not responsible for, you literally create an energy that doesn't belong in your physiology, and it creates a dis-ease condition. So at Heartland, our focus is on giving people a set of tools for how to work through those issues that they've spent perhaps all their lives mimicking the people in their lives that always blamed everybody else. You know, I'll do a demonstration where my wife and I will get up and, you know, we'll talk about meeting and how each of us in our meeting had our own hidden bags of garbage. And in having our own hidden bags of garbage, of course, we keep those bags well hidden from each other until one day, and I use the example of, you know, Jeannie gives me the look. You know, somebody in your life that knows how to give you the look. And being a normal human being, if I live in the normal game of life that most people live in, I'll say, your look, you giving me that look really makes me afraid. And what I've done is I've taken something that my physiology produces, fear, and I literally have made a carbon copy. And if she buys that idea that she made me fearful, then she puts my garbage in her bag, and her bag gets heavier.
And she has a lot of power.
in that game, yes. And actually, the power, when I blame someone else, the way I give away my power is through that blame. Mm-hmm. And so chances are that she's going to have a matching bag of garbage, and, you know, her match to my fear might be anger. And so she might look at me and say, yeah, Michael, and when you go into that fear stuff, you really make me mad. And if if I buy into that, then I take that garbage that is her fear, or pardon me, her anger. If I take that garbage that's her anger and put it in my bag, then my bag's gotten heavier with her garbage, and hers has gotten heavier with mine. And that tends to be the pattern of most people's relationships, loading each other up with that garbage, and together they quite literally go to hell.
I can just see you and your wife. What's her name, Jeannie?
Jeannie, yes.
I can just see the two of you going, well, that's your baggage. No, that's your baggage.
But that's people play. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'll go on when I do that demonstration, and I'll demonstrate what an adult would say in that situation, and that would be something along the lines of, gee, you know, Jeannie, when you gave me that look, it brought a lot of fear up for me, and what I'd love to do is heal my fear. Would you support me? And now, instead of an enemy to blame my internalized pain on, I have a friend and supporter to assist me in getting rid of it. And if she actually steps into an adult relationship in that same situation, she'd turn to me and say, yeah, you know, Michael, when you go into that fear stuff, that brings up frustration and anger for me, and I'm ready to be done with my frustration and anger. Would you support me in healing? And now, instead of blaming me for what's going on inside of her mind, she has me as a supporter for healing it. And as a result of our conflict, we each get to heal. Now, once I finish that demonstration in an audience, I'll then turn and ask the question, how many here have ever been in a family situation, been in a church, been in an educational institution, watched a television show, seen a movie, read a book where the hero and the heroine were in conflict, and one turned to the other and said, gee, you know, when you said thus and so to me, that really brought a lot of anger up in me. Would you support me in healing my anger? And, of course, everybody in the audience roars because nobody's ever seen it. Responsibility communication does not exist in our culture. We have all been trained from day one to blame everybody else for what's going on in our physiology. You made me angry. You made me sad. You made me afraid. You made me. You made me. You made me. And by doing so, we never get to the root of our pain, because our mind, being the kind of device it is, always shows us that our pain belongs to somebody else. And, of course, you can't change what belongs to somebody else. And so people get stuck in that cycle of, why is this happening to me again? Mm-hmm. You know, if you go back into the ancient Aramaic language, this man named Yeshua, there was never a man, by the way, named Jesus. His name was not Jesus, little Zeus. It was Yeshua. And he said the words, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. And for almost 2,000 years, we have not been able to translate that word heart because we had no concept in the West of what it meant. And so it became translated as kind of a, you know, a bleeding heart kind of thing. You must forgive from your heart. When Freud, just a few decades ago, rediscovered the unconscious, we were able to start to understand what Yeshua was saying 2,000 years ago. In the Aramaic language, that word heart would be the equivalent of our modern-day unconscious. And what Yeshua was saying was, you must forgive from your unconscious that which you've put into your brain's image of your brother and think is all his fault. And once you start to do that, once you realize, and, you know, we've kind of developed this very sophisticated test in this work for determining whether or not something you're experiencing is yours or not, and that is, are you experiencing it? If you are, then it's the output of your physiology. It's got to do with you, not who your mind hooks it to.
In your book, Dr. Rice, you talked about you had a client by the name of Richard, and he came to see you because he was so angry that he had been through a recent breakup in a relationship. And
right.
It was very interesting how he was so angry, and you tried to get him to take responsibility for his anger. Can you talk about that?
Well, the last thing that most people want to do is to take responsibility for what's going on inside of them, because they've been taught that if they ever do that, if they were responsible for that kind of behavior, they'd be bad, they'd be punished, they'd be wrong, they'd be given all sorts of labels and rejection. And, of course, the character Richard in the book, and most people who read my book, the most common feedback I get is, oh, my God, I'm Richard, or, oh, my God, I live with Richard. And I know 10 people that need to read this book, because everybody in our culture is playing the game of it's everybody else's fault. and getting back to that level of responsibility where I start to realize that if I'm feeling it, it's mine, gives me a chance to start to see what's going on inside of me in a true and accurate way, rather than through the distortion of denial, which means when I go into denial about something, I literally put it into my brain's image of another. In fact, you can go back, and one of the foundations of my work is the Aramaic scriptures, and you hear in Romans where it says, "Beware you who judge another, for that in which you judge another, you have been guilty of practicing." What we judge, what we point our finger at, what we have lots of emotion about, what we yell and holler about, is all an inside job. It's all about us. And the reason we point at it and condemn another for it is because we don't want to be responsible for it in ourselves.
Well, I've noticed with myself, Dr. Rice, that if somebody really upsets me, I have the same qualities that they do, if you want to call them qualities. Right. I have to take a really good look at myself, and it's hard to do that. It's hard to, when someone is so rude to you and so hurtful, to know that you're causing it on some level.
Well, the thing to get here is you're not causing them to do the behavior that they do. That's their responsibility. But the fact that it's happening in your space is your responsibility, and your response to it is your responsibility, and can only be seen accurately and changed when you recognize that it's your responsibility. You know, when you say, well, when somebody makes you angry, my offering to you would be, no one can make you angry. It's impossible. If you have anger in you, however, anybody can seem to make you angry. Anger is the output of our own physiology. And, you know, I love the old saying, you know, if they keep getting your goat, the solution is to get rid of your goat. If you have a lot of anger, then there are going to be people who are going to show up. And it can be traced from a physics point of view as to exactly why and how they show up. And they're going to do exactly the behavior that triggers the anger. And the reason for that is because we are energetic beings. We are not physical beings. And everything that we hold in us, and if one of those things is anger, then we literally set up a measurable field. I had the privilege of doing some work with a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, who was a 25-year senior scientist from IBM. This goes back, almost 20 years ago now that I got to do some work with Marcel. And he had a camera in the laboratory with which to take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Literally, by putting an energy, a thought, into our structure, that thought, by definition, is energy, and energy, by definition, is motion. And everything that's in motion sets up an energy wave. And because we live in a world of resonance, that is, where matching energy fields attract or draw each other, of course, if we hold anger in us, we're continuously sending out this high energy wave that's, you know, kind of like a psychic megaphone. Hey, is there anybody in town that knows how to make me angry?
Yeah.
And they'll appear to be able to make you angry. But my offering is they can't. They can only trigger what's there.
Well, Dr. Rice, we need to go out to break. And when we get back, I'd like to talk more about that, how we actually vibrate out that energy, and just some of the work you've done and how you got involved in this. Stay tuned. This is Linda Woods on Windows to Wellness. Our topic today is, why is this happening to me again? Dr. Michael Rice is my guest. He's written a book by that title, and his website is whyagain.com. He's the founder and director of Heartland, a self-healing sanctuary. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Be sure and visit our website at www.windowstowellness.com. www.windowstowellness.com. This is Linda Woods on Windows to Wellness, and our website is windowstowellness.com. We're talking about a very important topic today, forgiveness, and how many of us are holding on to that resentment and that anger and that oh, just we're seething with emotion about something that's happened to us, and we just can't let it go. And that's the topic for our show today. Why is this happening to me again? Why do I keep having these patterns in my life? My guest is Dr. Michael Rice. He is an expert on this topic. He has a doctorate in naturopathic medicine and holistic philosophy and a background in electronics and business. And we're going to find out in this segment just how he got involved in this topic and how he helps people at his self-healing sanctuary called Heartland. His website is whyagain.com. The word whyagain.com. Dr. Rice, how did you go from a background in business and electronics to this? You told me during the break that you'd been in 35 different time zones in the last 5 weeks in your travels. Is that right?
Yes, my wife and I travel anywhere from 6 to 10 months of the year. And by the way, if people want to go to my website, they can download my book free, Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It, in English, German, Russian, and Spanish.
Wow.
And
that's
we're working
really
on some other languages as well, but at this point, that's what we have on our website. And the way that I got involved in this work, my original work was in electronics with a side study in physics. And I moved into the arena of naturopathic medicine. And as I studied naturopathic medicine, I started to apply the ideas that I'd learned in my physics study to health, to how the mind works, how the body works, how life works. And about 25 years ago, I heard a fellow speaking about the Aramaic language. And what clicked in my brain is, this is about physics. This isn't about theology. And I started to look more deeply into it. And interestingly enough, the Aramaic language is the root language of at least 5 of the world's major religions. And I think the reason why it is the root language of those 5 major religions is because it isn't about religion. It's about physics. They knew how the world worked. And everything that the physicists are now understanding about microparticle physics and such was understood 2,000 years ago. It's built right into the language. The language itself reflects active and inactive states of mind in its very syntax. And when they talked about laws, they weren't talking about the rule of a superior, as many men would have us believe that's what law is, but rather they were saying, here are the laws of physics. Here's how the world works. And so there are certain energies that belong in this human system and certain ones that don't. Once I started to understand the Aramaic was about that, that became just kind of a very deep pursuit of mine. I am now the director of a foundation that's translating the oldest known copy of the New Testament in Aramaic into English. And what you find there is a formula and a set of tools for understanding exactly how life works, exactly how we fit in it, and if we're stuck in a situation that we've been through over and over and over again, they understood exactly how to put an end to those situations, and the solution was the process of forgiveness.
Did you have an experience in your own life, Dr. Rice, that propelled you in this direction? Did you have an issue that you were dealing with that you couldn't let go of?
Well, the first year of my life, I was almost dead 3 or 4 times from lung problems. And the first 25 years of my life, I lived on an inhaler and pills. They gave me every miracle drug that they knew would help me. And actually, I'm still detoxifying from that some years later. But once I found the forgiveness process and learned how to use the breath properly in the body, that pretty much put an end to my problems with those continuous allergies and asthma problems. So my motivator was physical. Mm-hmm. That's what drove me to come to understand this work.
So because you've gone through this process, all of your physical ailments have disappeared? Most of them?
Well, I wouldn't say all, but I don't live on an inhalator and pills, and the last time I went to a disease fair, of course they call them health fairs now, but the last time I went to a disease fair where, you know, they're selling this myriad of diseases and had my lungs checked, the person who checked my lungs was amazed at my lung capacity and expressed that amazement. And when I told them my history, they wanted to go back and do a review because I couldn't possibly have that kind of lung capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the result I've experienced.
And did that move you in the direction of naturopathic medicine?
It was that pursuit of my own healing that moved me in the direction mm-hmm. of naturopathy, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, in your book, you talk about the body being an energy system, and I really like the analogy you used of the butterfly flapping its wings and causing a hurricane on the other side of the world, and that we really do have an effect on everything, every part of life, with the thoughts that we think. Is that what you were trying to convey?
Well, in the whole system of thought called chaos theory, that's one of the examples that they use, and the idea being that very small initial causes can produce very large results. And oftentimes we engage in causes in our lives having no idea of the kind of results they're going to produce. And when those results are produced, we want to pretend that we're not responsible for them. And, you know, I'll kind of tongue-in-cheek remind people that you'll notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the one that was there every time. And once you realize that, then you have an opportunity to start to change what's happening inside of you and stop this pretense that what's going on inside of you is everybody else's fault.
When people come to you at your self-healing sanctuary, does it take them a while to understand that they are energy systems and that, I mean, I'm sure there's a time frame here that, just like in your book, Richard just couldn't accept the fact that he was responsible.
Right. Well, you know, it takes time to build the brain cells. And if you go back to the teachings of Yeshua, he says that his teaching is only for those who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think we can be pretty well assured that, you know, probably most everybody in his audience had the, what we call the physical eyes and physical ears. He wasn't talking about that. What he was saying is that in order for your mind to show you a particular reality, you have to have that information stored in brain cells to even be able to generate that reality. Here's another example I'll do. I'll draw on the board a flat line, and then I'll put a semicircle over top of it. Then inside of that semicircle, I'll put two additional semicircles. If you can imagine that picture on the board, and I'll say to people, okay, now what is this? And, you know, somebody will put their hand up and say, well, that's Kilroy, or, you know, that's that guy that, you know, is peeking up over the table. Or somebody else will say, well, that's a two-door igloo. And someone else will say, well, that's a train tunnel. And, of course, I'll offer, no, 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 it's none of those things. And then I'll offer the thought, what you have there are lines on a board. The reality that you hold about those lines on the board, you only see as belonging to those lines on the board because those lines on the board stimulate that reality in your mind. For instance, the person that says, well, that's a two-door igloo. I ask them the question, well, you know, if you were a Guatemalan peasant who'd never left your village and never seen anything more complex than the dugout canoe that your family uses to get to, you know, to the other side of the stream, would you think that when you saw those lines, would you think of that as a two-door igloo? Mm-hmm. Of course, they couldn't possibly think of it as a two-door igloo because they have no concept of what a two-door igloo is. They have no brain cells for that. And we don't see things in our world that we don't have brain cells for. If we have lots of brain cells that contain a lot of anger, then we'll look around and we'll see lots of things that we say make us angry. But the content of anger is no more in the person who makes us angry than the igloo, the two-door igloo, is in the lines on the board. All of that's contained in brain cells, and so I'll oftentimes offer the thought in my workshops that the realities output from a mind always tell more about the content of that mind than the world we think we're looking at. And once you recognize that, then if you find that your mind is outputting content that you don't like, you darn soon get about forgiving it and getting rid of it to be done with it. Because on an energetic level, it is a disintegrated frequency compared to your field. And if we listen to Einstein, Einstein says this, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. Einstein says matter doesn't exist. We are energetic frequency beings. And the frequencies that we hold within us impact the quality of our physiology. If we are in any form of hostility or fear, we're engaging in a dis-ease frequency relative to our cellular structure. If you look at the latest that's coming out of the cell biologists' laboratories, a gentleman named Bruce Lipton, we have a DVD that we carry on our tape table when we travel, where the cell biologist, Bruce Lipton, 20-year medical researcher, is showing that when we think a thought, we literally produce a molecule called a neuropeptide in our bodies. Yeah. And that neuropeptide, he offers, circulates around in the body until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It locks onto the receptor site, and then the cell replicates the neuropeptide chemically, and you're living with the chemistry of your thoughts.
He is a fascinating scientist. I had him on the show a couple of years ago, and we talked about that cells react to the same thing we do, either fear or love.
Exactly.
And he actually showed in a test tube in a laboratory how cells can gravitate toward love, growth, food, or retreat into protection from fear, toxins. And that's basically what you're saying.
That's it, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we're responsible for the qualities of energies that are held within our field. Max Planck, a Nobel Prize-winning physicist, when he received the Nobel Prize in Physics, spoke about the fact that, once again, he said, as a man who's spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. What we've called matter are nested frequencies, one nested within another, nested within another. And every nested frequency that we hold literally is stored holographically in every cell in our structure, interestingly enough, including the sperm and the egg. And were we to conceive a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure every thought we've ever thought, every feeling we've ever felt, every reality we've ever engaged in. It's passed on from generation to generation to generation. Now, let's go back to the ancient ways of speaking about these ideas. And you heard a story about a fellow named Moses and a group that he had that wandered in the desert. Do you know why Moses and his group ended up spending 40 years in the desert?
Why?
It's because Moses would not stop and ask for directions. No, just kidding. No,
what okay. They,
something had to happen before they... You sound like you've had that experience.
Yes.
No, they said in those scriptures, they said something had to happen before that group of people could get out of the desert, which is just a code word for the unconscious, into the promised land. What had to happen? They said the old generation had to die off. Now, that didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari, which means cause. All of the old causes held in the mind had to go before we could get on to something else in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we're designed to get on to something else than what the old generations are about.
Well, Dr. Rice, we need to go out to break, and I hate to cut you off in the middle of a thought like this because it's so fascinating, but when we get back, I want to find out just how we change our frequencies. How do we change? I know what Dr. Lipton suggests, but I want to hear what you have to say about that, and
right.
How do we change the predominant thought that's embedded in every cell in our body? And so stay tuned. This is Linda Woods on Windows to Wellness. Our website is windowstowellness.com. My guest today is Dr. Michael Rice. He is the author of this wonderful book called Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It. His website is whyagain.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Be sure and visit our website at www.windowstowellness.com. www.windowstowellness.com. This is Linda Woods on Windows to Wellness, and our website is windowstowellness.com. Today we're talking about a topic that is so important to many of us, to all of us really.
how to forgive. How do we really go in and change our thoughts, change our frequencies to really change what we're attracting into our life? My guest is Dr. Michael Rice. He has a doctorate in naturopathic medicine and holistic philosophy. He has a self-healing sanctuary in the Ozark Mountains. And also on your site, Dr. Rice, whyagain.com, you have tapes and DVDs and CDs. What all do you have there?
Yes, well, I do 10 different workshops. There's a whole series of titles I do based in the ideas of why is this happening to me again. There's healing through relationships. There's codependence to interdependence, communication. Did you hear what I think I said? Empowered to heal, purpose, personal power, and commitment, getting the stress you need. There's a whole series that I do. People can look there. They can also keep track. I travel all over the globe and do the work that I do free. My travel workshops are all done free. And so anybody's welcome to look at my website. There's a travel section that tells you where I'm going to be. I just finished lecturing in Europe and Alaska.
Well, you really have a calling and a mission to be able to provide this information at no charge. And I commend you for that. And a lot of people will do that. So that's wonderful.
Well, my commitment, you know, when my children were small, it became really clear to me that if somebody didn't do something about what was going on in the planet, we were in big trouble. Like, is there going to be a place for my kids to grow up? And so I committed to doing what I could do to make a shift. And what I'm committed to is getting especially this tool of forgiveness to every mind on the planet by delivering it to enough people who will use it that will reach critical mass. And when we do, there's going to be a shift, and people will automatically start to understand what the internal process of forgiveness is, as opposed to the external process that is promoted, that is, you know, well, we blame everybody else, but we're nice about it. We let them off the hook, which is the idea of pardoning has got nothing to do with forgiveness. And so my commitment is to restore the understanding of Yeshua's original teaching on forgiveness.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's say that someone insults you, or someone spreads a negative rumor about you at your place of employment. Someone really stabs you in the back, okay?
Okay.
How do you get through that in a loving way?
Well, you know, one of the things I explained to Richard is the only way you can get through that in a loving way is if there's nothing of hostility or fear in you. And if there is hostility or fear in you, then what's going to come up around that issue, if you have that hostility or fear connected to that issue, is that hostility and fear. If you go back 2,000 years ago, you hear them asking Yeshua, you know, what's most important in the law? What comes first? And he says, and he names three objects of attention, the Creator, your neighbor, and yourself. And neighbor in that language, by the way, means anybody that you think about. And what he says is, the first law, the most important law, is to keep love for the Creator, your neighbor, and yourself. Now, interestingly enough, there's 17 different words that have been translated by one English word, love. And it might be important to know what word he used and what that word means if we really think he might have known what he was talking about. I would offer the word he used was the word rachma, and rachma literally is a condition in our minds. It's a filter. And it's a filter that keeps our minds connected to love when things go awry around us, instead of falling into hostility or fear. You know, one of the questions I'll often kind of tongue-in-cheek ask in my workshop is, has anybody here ever done something that you regret? And of course, everybody does a little giggle and puts their hand up. And I'm going to ask you, Linda, and I'll ask everyone in our audience to think about one particular time where you did something that today you regret having done it. And then I ask the question that you go back, or I ask people to go back and think about what it is they were feeling when they did that thing that they regret. The answers are always things. Well, do you mind if I ask what your answer is? If you,
what I felt when I did that thing I regret?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what I regret. Guilt comes to mind.
So the answers that I get will be things like guilt and fear and anger and sadness.
Sadness, uh-huh.
The word love, now I've asked this question of tens of thousands of people over the years. The word love never shows up. Never once has anybody said, I felt totally and completely loving when I did what I regretted. Yeshua was not giving us a religious idea. He was not trying to promote some form of morality. He was giving us the answer to how to keep our mind as its most intelligent. Because when we go in, the alternative filters in the human mind to love are hostility and fear. And 100% of the time when I ask people what they were feeling when they did something they regret, 100% of the time the answer is always some variation on the theme of hostility or fear.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because when we go into hostility or fear, our intelligence is reduced. We get stupid. That's why we do what we regret.
That's right.
We're saying, you want to keep your intelligence active? Keep love active in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
When you lose that condition, you get stupid.
So you're saying if we have thoughts of love, and there are ways to program ourselves with that, and I'm sure meditation, I think, is one of the things that you recommend, then when we have something happen to us from the outside, from a person that we work with or from a friend or a non-friend, then we won't react. We will respond in a different way.
Right. We'll be conscious. And, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't mean that somebody doesn't do things that are off base, crazy, off the wall, improper. But when we keep the condition of love active in our minds, when we take responsibility for our own physiology, we stay intelligent. And with that intelligence, we have a much better chance of being able to hold this neighbor accountable for the thing they did that was off the wall. If they stabbed us in the back, instead of degenerating into a squabble, the person who can keep love active in their mind is going to be able to logically and sensibly hold this person accountable and move in the direction of resolution rather than degenerate into war.
Okay, so how do you hold love predominantly in your mind?
Well, first of all, you make a choice to do it.
Okay.
Secondly, you make a practice of doing it. And third, you start to forgive everything in you that's unlike love. Because if somebody comes along and resonates with unlike love in you, it's going to take over. Because we have been in denial of those states of hostility and fear so much and for so long, for so many generations, whenever someone comes along and triggers them, and another person cannot cause them in us, they can only trigger those states in us. When they're triggered, that's our chance to forgive, to remove them from our physiology and get out of the habit of using those states of mind to guide us. When we get out of the habit of using those states of mind to guide us, we move into that condition of love and use that state of mind to guide us. We're just a whole lot smarter there. That's the bottom line of it. It doesn't mean by taking responsibility for your own state of mind that you lay down and let people walk all over you. You stand up with strength, power, clarity, and intelligence with the mind of love, and you hold people accountable for your behavior. I had a mentor in my process, and this man was he was almost akin to a saint to me. His name was Judge Asa D. Kelly. He was a Superior Court judge in Albany, Georgia. You know, in the United States, we put more people in prison than any country in the world. And in Georgia, the state of Georgia puts more people in prison than any state in the United States. Albany, well, if you've ever lived there, it's not a very nice town. Judge Asa Kelly was a Superior Court judge, and he put thousands of people in prison over his career as a judge. But you know something? He never punished one of them. When somebody would come before him with love in his heart, he would hold them, and he would explain to them how his community is something that he loved and that he wanted to take care of his community and that the people in his community had taken up a collection to build a building with a set of bars and asked him to be the one who decides who's not safe in the community. And out of his love for his community, he would put people behind bars. I co-authored a course called Laws of Living that we used in the state prison system in Georgia with hardcore felons. And we saw changes that, you know, you would say this isn't possible to happen. And what Judge Kelly would do would be he would offer these folks an opportunity to go through the Laws of Living course to start to get their lives back on track, to get back to a sane mind rather than the mind of hostility and fear. And it works.
I bet that was major for you, that experience.
Oh, it was. Uh-huh. It was. Just this man was just amazing in the way he functioned.
But not only him, but the way the prisoners, I think I read that in some of your material, that the prisoners who had no hope ever of changing their condition, that some of their changes were really monumental.
Yeah, we have record of approximately 20,000 MMPIs, and the MMPI is the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. It's kind of the gold standard of psychological testing. And we've got 20,000 of them with hardcore felons. And they reflect the kind of changes that the average person who knows how to read the MMPI would look at and say, this cannot be the same person as the person who did the pre-assessment. It just can't be the same person. You can't get that kind of change. And the core of the teaching that we presented in the prisons was the process of forgiveness.
Now, you have some tools that you use in your workshops.
Yes, every workshop that I do, every little one of those titles that I mentioned earlier, has a tool, has a how-to start to change the dynamics of what's going on within you.
And one of them is breath work?
Yes, I do a process. I've developed a process called still point breathing. If you watch someone when they're in upset, the first thing they do is shut down the breath. And you remember earlier I talked about denial?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we deny something, when there's something we don't want to deal with, we've got to have a mechanism for shutting it down and keeping it out of sight. The mechanism is the breath. And so when you watch people in trauma, the first thing they do is lock down and hold their breath. And that's literally the way that they suppress or hide the things they don't want to deal with. Of course, the problem with that is the place they hide it is within themselves. The one place that it's guaranteed they're going to get to look at it again,
uh-huh,
and again and again and again until they can bring it out of hiding. And using the breath properly, and that's what I do with still point breathing, is one of the ways to open and start to let go of those things that we've perhaps spent a lifetime locking away within our own physiology. And, of course, then trying to get everybody else to change because we don't want to look at what's in our physiology.
Uh-huh. I know when I'm facing a situation and I'm not comfortable, I crack jokes.
Huh?
I'll just do anything I can to avoid what I really need to look at. And
right. And just watch. You'll also notice that as you're cracking those jokes, you're holding your breath. Because that's always the first line of defense against looking at something inside of us that we're uncomfortable with.
When we get back from break, Dr. Rice, I'm going to share an issue that I'm dealing with that's been very painful for me. And it's a stretch for me to talk about this on the air, but I'm not going to mention any names. It's just an issue involving forgiveness. And I would like your opinion on how to deal with it. And I would be so grateful for that.
I'd be absolutely delighted. And I acknowledge your courage for doing that.
So stay tuned. This is Linda Woods on Windows to Wellness. Our website is windowstowellness.com. We're talking today about forgiveness, something I need to learn, and many of you perhaps need to learn also. The website for my guest, Dr. Michael Rice, is whyagain.com. He's the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So stay tuned for part 4 of our program. Be sure and visit our website at www.windowstowellness.com. www.windowstowellness.com. This is Linda Woods on Windows to Wellness, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. Our website is windowstowellness.com. Today, we're talking about forgiveness, and my guest is Dr. Michael Rice. He is the founder and director of Heartland. It's a self-healing sanctuary in the Ozark Mountains, and he's coming to Nashville very soon, and I'm so excited about his visit. He's also probably going to be in a city near you very soon. You can check that out on his website, whyagain.com. He's the author of this book called Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And I shared before the break, Dr. Rice, about a personal issue in my life that I'd really like to discuss. And I really don't know how this is going to come out, so I'm just going to turn it over to Spirit. And it's just something I'm very angry about. And I actually used a worksheet that you have in your workshop to try to get through this. I have a friend. We used to confide a lot in each other, and I was always telling her all the personal things in my life, and I've just noticed and recently that she has not been as forthcoming about personal things in her life. And we went to a movie together recently and went back to her house to discuss something, and I shared something with her about giving up control. I'd had dinner with a friend, and I told him I was not really ready to give up control of certain things in my life. And he said, well, you need to look at that. And she pointed out to me that I live a good bit of my life in fear, and I'm so immersed in it that I just don't see it. And she said, well, I'm dealing with some of my things. And I said, oh, what are those? And she said, well, I'd rather not say. So I got mad and I left, and we emailed each other the next day, and she said the reason that she didn't share things with me was because I violated a confidence that she had shared with me last year. And I did not remember what she was talking about. I had no clue what confidence, because I'm not one to betray confidences when someone tells me that it's a confidence. I just don't do that. And she refused to tell me what it was that I did or what I said to whom. And I said, well, with whatever I did, it was never with malicious intent. You know that. She said, I know that, but it's not safe for me to share with you. And that was like a that was like a stake through my heart. It was a insult to my integrity. And what was your question?
What's happening with your breath right now?
I'm not breathing at all.
There's one of the number one keys. When there's something in us that you know, somebody says something that resonates, something we don't want to deal with, we shut the breath down.
But
because that's how we keep those things hidden that we don't want to deal with.
In my mind, I'm
how you breathe at this point. Just take a couple of deep breaths and be in touch with what's going on inside of you, and keep your breath moving as you talk about this.
Okay. Well, in my mind, I've never done anything with malicious intent in the relationship, and I was so hurt that she would have this reaction to me, and my reaction to her was to want to punish, to shut her out of my life. She only wants to be in my life on a very superficial level now, and the friendship that I have is gone. And I'm trying to find the love inside, but I feel anger and resentment. And on your worksheet, you're supposed to draw this. And I mean, I look like a child in kindergarten the way I drew this. I drew it with such anger.
Yep.
And
so we're probably dealing with an issue of a child of 5 or 6. That's okay. What she's triggered in you.
Okay.
Remember that we're talking about she's triggered something in you. She's not caused this in you. Now, if we have a painful reality inside of us, in order to avoid dealing with that, if we think the trigger in our lives is the cause of what we're feeling inside of us, then we have to change them. And potentially, we have to change everybody in the world so we don't have to look at those things inside of us. I would offer that my feedback to you would be, it sounds like your friend was really quite honest with you, quite candid with you. She knew that you didn't have malicious intent, but you didn't.
I didn't what?
No. You didn't know you didn't have malicious intent. That's why you're upset. My offering is that's why you're so upset with her, because somewhere inside of you, you're holding that you had malicious intent. You're laying that on her, but she already told you, no, I know you didn't have malicious intent. It just is the way it came out.
You're saying on some level I really did?
Well, I'm saying, no, not necessarily. I'm saying on some level, Is she triggering a situation, probably back at the age of 4, 5, or 6, from what you've said, where you did have some malicious intent? or you watched someone with malicious intent and took that in.
I see.
Made it part of yourself. Mm-hmm. And my offering to you is that she's triggering that in you, which gives you the opportunity to dump that energy from yourself.
And how do you do that?
Really, well, we've already identified the situation has to do with this this woman that you know, and you feel accused by her. And so the next core step, if you go all the way down to step number 6 in the worksheet process, and by the way, people can go to the website and download chapter 24 in the book that gives the instructions for this worksheet process. If you go down to number 6, there's something that you wanted from her in that situation, in that conversation. Mm-hmm. What was it that you wanted from her?
Well, I wanted her to forgive me if I had done anything that hurt her. And apparently it hurt her very deeply.
Okay. And she had pain that she was blaming you for, and now you've got pain that you're blaming her for, and now it's a standoff.
It is.
And your language earlier reflected that the relationship is over.
It is.
My offering to you is that this is actually an opportunity, you know, that example I used in the first segment of the workshop with my wife and I, you know, if I'm taking my garbage and putting it on your shoulders and you're taking your garbage and putting it on mine, then we blame each other and we separate because of it. But when I can look at, okay, what's the goal that I had for her in that initial conversation? And that was, well, gee, I want her to be candid and upfront with me. Would that be accurate?
Correct. Uh-huh.
Okay. So then that's step number 6 in the worksheet. Let's jump down 3 or 4 steps. We're really short-forming this, and I hope it comes across all right. Go down to step number 9. You bring that answer, I wanted her to be candid with me, down to step number 9. I wanted her to be honest with me. And then what you do, interestingly enough, is you cancel your need for her to be honest with you. And that goal literally is the driver that we load into our mind that keys us into that old painful data we hold within us. Probably, as we said earlier, from that 4 or 5 year old, from what you said about the way you drew your feelings in that worksheet. Mm-hmm. So to look at that goal and then to cancel it, the only reason that out of a 20 trillion bit world, you'd be focused on her around this situation is because you have a goal for her around this situation. There are 1,000 other things you could have been focusing on in your environment, but you weren't. It was that particular situation. And so by canceling the goal, you literally allow what the 9-bit mind is holding to collapse. And when you do, by collapsing it, you get to look at the next deeper part of your own mind. So how about just trying that right now? Just, you know, I cancel my need for her to be candid and honest and forthcoming with me.
Okay.
Go ahead and say that to yourself.
I did say it to myself.
Okay.
You just didn't hear it.
What's the next thought that comes up?
The next thought that comes up? What would love do?
Okay. So is that a shift in mind for you?
Yes.
Yes. That's what forgiveness does, mm-hmm. is it allows the space to shift what the 9-bit mind holds. And so where she touched a part of you that had pain, there was no room in that painful part to think about what would love do. And by canceling the goal, by literally unloading the driver, you shift to a different part of your mind, which holds a million other possibilities. Now, there's a second part to that step number 9. If you go back into the ancient Aramaic, Yeshua taught about a power that was a feminine power that literally was described as an element, in Aramaic, is described or defined as an elemental force that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. In our modern language, we might call it the superprocessor. And so the first step is to cancel the goal. Second step is to ask that power, it was called in Aramaic, Ruka Dekutcha, to undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. So how about just doing that second part of it? Cancel, and then I invite that power to let loose of this pain in me.
Okay.
and let yourself breathe.
Oh, I'm really good at that. Okay.
Good one. That's the kind of breath that comes out of still point breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the release occurs. So where's your focus now? What are you thinking about now?
What I'm thinking about right now, honestly, is how on earth you do this for everybody in your workshops.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge.
Because everyone has such a different issue, and you know, everyone's so emotional about different things. And I guess just sharing this has helped someone with some issue, even if it wasn't the same issue.
Right. Well, what happens is there's technology. Yeshua has come straight out of the Aramaic. The word in Aramaic, forgive, is shabag, but it literally translates to cancel. And it has to do with, in order to make any sense out of anything in your life, you've got to have a goal for it. You know, there's 10,000 things you could focus on in any given environment. You've got to have a goal for the thing you're focused on in order for your mind to use data about it to make up your reality. By canceling the goal, you collapse the reality of the 9-bit mind that, you know, we tend to want to hold on to like the 600-pound gorilla with its last banana, you know. Mm-hmm. We want this reality to be true. It's all their fault, and boy, we do. And we lose contact with our essential nature, which is love.
Well, I lead a pretty peaceful life, and this was a real jar for me, and didn't really know how to deal with it.
The jar that came from probably being about 5.
Mm-hmm. And we were all 5 at one time.
Yeah, we've all been there, done that, exactly.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
So that's called forgiving from your heart the wrongs of your sister. And that word heart being unconscious, that's how you go in. And literally you start to diffuse the unconscious energy that we project into our brain's image of someone else. And we get to get free because of it.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm breathing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Nice breath. And do you suppose it would be easier to talk with her now?
I think she's beyond it. I'm the one that's holding on, that was holding on to the resentment.
Oftentimes, these issues that crop up again and again and again are literally generational issues that have been going on. If you go back and ask mom and dad about some of the core issues in your life, you'll find that both mom and dad, or at least one of them, had the same issue and never worked through it. If you went to gramps and grandpa, grandma, grandpa, you'd find 1, 2, 3, or all 4 had the same issue and never worked through it. Go on back and look at the generations. And so some of the major issues where we have a lot of emotional trauma, we might have to do 77 times 70 worksheets to clear that energy out of our field, to access our own unconscious dynamics.
I want to thank you so much, Dr. Rice. We're about out of time. Your website is whyagain.com. I really recommend that if you're listening and you can get to one of Dr. Rice's workshops, that you do so. It's very empowering to go through this. And your book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It. Thank you so much, Dr. Rice, for joining us.
Delighted, and blessings.
And remember to take care of yourself. Open some of those windows to wellness. Think about this forgiveness process. Take it in. Breathe, as Dr. Rice said. And most importantly, look for opportunities to love. We'll see you next week.
Be sure and visit our website at www.windowstowellness.com. www.windowstowellness.com.